The pride, passion, and pageantry of college football lives here. This is the Paul Feinbaum Show, Hour 4 podcast.
And we say hello to you for the final hour of the day. And the day's not over yet here on the SEC Network. And if you were watching earlier, you saw our next guest. He is Benjamin Watson, played at Georgia. Most people know him from his career winning a Super Bowl with the Saints. And Benjamin, great to see you. And we've met once or twice. We've got a few friends out there, mutual friends. But you are, let's talk about, how has this first day been covering SEC Media Days as opposed to speaking at Media Days?
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you, but it's been exciting. It's kind of like drinking from a a fire hydrant, though. Everything coming at me at one time, but it's really been tremendous. It's exciting. I mean, I remember coming to Media Days 20 years ago with Georgia and really just being wowed, I think, by how many people were here and the excitement that was just around the Media Days. But then I remember going back to Athens with the guys that I came with and realizing, you know what, this is kind of the kickoff of our season. Now it's time to really kick it into high gear. And so as I see these players come in, it's like I remember myself then and just the excitement that they're having and understanding that, okay, when they go back to their respective towns around the SEC, the next stop is training camp and it's time to get this thing going. So
let me ask you about that, because, you know, we spend so much time on the coaches and, you know, depending on the player, but I've seen them walk through here and talk to a couple of them or talk to a lot of them over the years. And describe to the audience what it's like for a young player who obviously is very good, but still has never been through this.
It's a little different deal. I was watching one of the gentlemen from Florida up there on the podium and fielding those questions. That is not an easy thing to do, to stand in front of a room full of reporters asking you questions, and you don't want to throw anybody under the bus. You don't want to say the wrong thing. You know, if you mess up, you're going to hear about it from your coach. And so there's a tremendous amount of pressure, but at the same time, it's quite an honor. You know, it's an honor to be able to represent your team and your club and your school here in Birmingham. And so there's kind of this duality that these guys are experiencing. But I will say that I feel like players now are much more prepared than I was 20-something years ago, especially with the advent of, you know, everybody has a microphone now. Sure. Social media has given everybody a microphone. And so from that and from the compliance offices and just the media training that so many players are receiving right now with their teams, I feel like they're a little more prepared to field some of the questions than we were coming up.
Benjamin, you mentioned compliance, which is a word you don't hear very often in the new strata of the NCAA. But I'm particularly curious, as somebody who has been a player and who had a very long and distinguished NFL career, what your thoughts are on where we are at this moment in time, just a few weeks after players can now start making money?
Well, I'm catching up just like everybody else, and it seems like everybody else is kind of catching up, even though they thought they knew what the rules were going to be. Different rules in different states and all this, and there seems to be an overwhelming feeling, even in speaking with different coaches from teams, that they're just trying to protect their student athletes while also allowing them to maximize their potential and their money-making capability off of their likenesses. There seems to be this idea that people are for it, but also don't want athletes to be exploited. That's my feeling as well. You know, it's long overdue, in my opinion. I mean, I remember walking into stadiums around the SEC and seeing people wearing our jerseys and wondering, why can't we benefit from the revenue that's being brought in? And so there's an excitement there, but there's also, I think, a bit of hesitation simply because the rules are not super clear and nobody wants to see anybody taken advantage of.
On that front, there seems to be some concern, though, that this will become the Wild Wild West, where the better schools will figure out a way to, I don't know if manipulate's the right word, but they'll figure it out. I mean, not that an average run-of-the-mill football school can't, but do you think we are moving toward a day when compliance just becomes a forgotten word in college athletics?
Well, there's an evolution. There's an evolution, and things evolve. I mentioned social media before and the fact that there's more exposure now. Things have to evolve. You can't have the same archaic rules that we had 10, 20 years ago. It's just not going to work in this environment. Players understand their agency. They understand their earning power. I think coaches understand that. NCAA understands that. And so this is a step in the right direction. But there needs to be the due diligence, I would say, to protect from those things happening. As far as larger schools, look, schools that are in the Power Five, schools that are perennial powerhouses, they're always going to be able to use things like this to their advantage. They're going to have more resources. They have larger fan bases. They have deeper pockets. They have more companies wanting to touch and hold their players and do deals with their players. And so they're going to benefit from this for sure. But at the same time, when we talk about balancing the revenue for players, I think this is an avenue that, again, is long overdue.
Benjamin, in relation to this time in history, I mentioned the NIL, but there's so many other things happening. I mean, we are a year past one of the seminal moments in American history in the social justice movement. I've heard you on various networks talk about that a year ago, and I know how much you're concerned about today. But I'm particularly interested in young people who are now playing this game, and their role in what is happening in our country. How do you view that?
I've been so proud, Paul, to see young people, young student athletes, young students, young people in general. Get involved. When we look even at the civil rights movement of the 60s, we tend to forget that Martin Luther King was in his 30s, that John Lewis was in his 20s. I mean, we think of these people as older folks who were mature. No, this was a young people's movement. And I'm not in any way comparing it to that. But what I am saying is that the youth breed energy. They breed a new energy and a new understanding about what's happening around the world. And they have sometimes a naivety that we don't have when we get a little bit older. Outside of that, when it comes to athletes, there has long been this feeling with athletes that you had to stay in your place. Your place is between those white lines. Do your best between the white lines. Don't say anything outside of that. If you're on a court, dribble the basketball and shut up. And what we're seeing is that people are pushing back against that and saying, no, I come from whatever community I come from. I pay taxes. I vote. I care about my brothers and sisters. I care about what's happening. I care about voting, whatever the issue may be. And you're seeing this people rise up and say collectively, I'm going to lend my voice to these issues. And not only that, I'm going to take the time to understand what I'm fighting for. What you don't want is people speaking about things that they know not of. But what I've seen from young people, even from, the colleges and SEC, the football teams that have come together and had listen and learns, that they've learned about the history of our country and those sorts of things, there's a desire to understand with the hope of bringing unity that truly sports is able to bring in a way that nothing else really can.
You mentioned 20 years ago when you were a student and an athlete. Did you want to speak out on issues, or did you feel like you could versus where we are right now?
If what happened last year happened then, I would not feel the freedom, obviously, that I have now as an adult. But even comparing what I see and how I've spoken to so many of the student athletes, especially on campus in Athens, having conversations with some of those young men about what they're struggling with, I do remember speaking about certain things, but there wasn't an acceptance that we see now, even from coaches. I would say that from a leadership standpoint, from the president of universities to the coaches and on down, there is an expectation, or at least an open door, to facilitating these conversations. Now, whether that's genuine or not, there is an expectation that a coach at least address some of these issues, and I think the players appreciate that.
You have two trains coming down right now. You have the social justice conversation where young people are talking, and coaches, by and large, said the right thing, most of them.
Most of the time.
And there's no way of really testing the authenticity, because they're in a recruiting business. But what's, and then on the other side, you have the NIL, So, I mean, there is quite a convergence, it would seem, that athletes today have a lot of freedom. They have a voice. And I wonder, you played the game for a long time, how these coaches feel about that.
You know, in hearing from them, they want to win football games, which is their job.
Sure.
And so we can never get to a point where we say, all right, we're simply going to be community-minded and justice-minded and not worry about football, because they are hired to play and win football games. I think Commissioner Sankey said it best when he said that change comes quickly in his speech, and change has come so quickly. There's this immediate need right now for voices of reason and for voices of justice. And I think for a lot of coaches, look, in my time in the NFL over the last several years, I've seen ownership who had no idea about certain issues that were happening in their cities come and sit down at the table, hear about criminal justice reform, hear about sentencing, and hear about, you know, different issues of poverty, and the light bulb goes on. And then suddenly, because of their platform, they're able to advocate in ways that they never had before. I think the same thing has happened with some coaches. Whether they were adverse to having the conversation or not, because of this time, many of them have been made aware of things that were happening under their nose that they had no idea about. They were just ignorant and didn't know. And so now, for some of them, they're able to advocate more effectively than before. So do they want to talk about it? I think some of them do. Do they have to? I think yes, but ultimately, their job is to shepherd these young men into being statesmen, citizen, and all the way winning a lot of football games.
What a fantastic conversation with Benjamin Watson. I hope you'll come back.
I will.
We would love to have you.
Be a pleasure.
It's so great to see you and to introduce you even further to this audience. We'll take a break. Your phone call is around the corner at 855-242-7285. We have some more guests as well. Day one, SEC Media Day, is winding down.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
And we welcome you back as we continue live from SEC Media Days. And we have not had a lot of time to take phone calls. We will make up for that now. Let's check in with Chad, who is in Athens, Georgia. Hello, Chad. Good afternoon.
Hey, how are you doing, Paul?
We are great. Thank you for calling.
Hey, I wanted to talk to you about my recent experiences as of late. So I was going through Instagram, and I commented on a post. I followed this recruiting on Instagram, and then I was swarmed and attacked by multiple Clemson fans. And I've just come to realize that these Clemson fans are very arrogant and sometimes delusional. They think they're going to get every recruit. They think they're going to win every game. And they show no hospitality whatsoever, and they really hate on Georgia fans.
This podcast is proud to be supported by Jet's Pizza, the number one pick in Detroit-style pizza. Why? It's simple. Jet's is better. With the thickest, crispiest, cheesiest Detroit-style pizza in the country, there's no competition. Right now, get $5 off any 8-corner pizza with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Go to jetspizza.com to learn more and find a location near you. Again, try Jet's signature 8-corner pizza and get $5 off with code 8SAVE. That's the number 8, S-A-V-E. Jet's Pizza. Better because it has to be. Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-hour energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5hourenergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5hourenergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Chad, I'm glad you have discovered that. A lot of people have been saying that for a while. Appreciate it. Cat Daddy, could you have anything to add to Clemson fans are arrogant? I know you've never encountered that. How are you?
I'm good. Glad to see you back on. You looking good, sounding good. I think every college team has bad fans and good fans. I don't judge everybody, because a couple of them, what they say to all of them, feel that way. But I do have some news for you. Tiger yes. Boyd was hired by Dabo to be the quarterback's coach.
Oh, I saw that. How about that?
And Georgia fans taking him. They ain't got but three linemen, offensive linemen, coming back this year. Justin Rose, one of the best receivers, may not make the game. And the big rumor is, you ain't going to believe this, Big Paul, Dabo Swinney is down at the border trying to recruit illegal aliens to play football.
I thought I'd heard that story somewhere before. Chris is up next. How are you, Chris?
Hey, Paul. Thanks for taking my call.
Thank you.
Yeah, I just want to say, first and foremost, I don't know if anyone's brought this up yet, but congratulations on your contract extension with ESPN.
Saturday, thank you very much.
In the fall, Saturdays wouldn't be the same without you. Let's have a quick story. Back in 97, you used to have a TV show on Fox 6 with Rick Carley. Recapping the previous day's college football action. And it was after the 97 Iron Bowl, I believe, the Ed System fumble. And I was watching that show with my dad that Sunday, and it came on, and you come on the screen. He got up out of his recliner, walked to the TV screen, and pointed right at you and said, "That man is an idiot." He said Auburn had no chance to beat Alabama, and we showed him. And it was at that moment I realized how much impact you had on this state and the fans, and I appreciate what you do. I've been listening to you for over 20 years now.
Thank you. You know, the irony of that game, the man who made the call on that swing pass was Bruce Arians, and everyone called for him to be fired. And look at that. Look at him now. He's the Super Bowl winning coach of the Tampa Bay Bucks.
Right. He hasn't had much success after that.
No, been to a few Super Bowls. But thank you for saying that. And, you know, I encountered quite a bit of the turbulence with fans in the first three quarters of my tenure. But things have gone a lot better, and I appreciate you remembering back then.
Oh, yeah, I'll never forget it, man.
Well, that means a lot. You take care of yourself, and you be well. Thanks so much. How about Tony?
No, thanks for taking the call.
You got it. Be well. Tony is up next. Hey, Tony, go right ahead.
Good afternoon, Paul. I wanted to tell you and thank you. We were having withdrawal over here in North Florida when you weren't on. I've got a dentist. He's a retired dentist, and he says, "Where's Paul? Where's Paul?" And I said, "Well, hell, I don't know." So glad to have you back.
I should warn people, every year in July, it's usually the 2 weeks before media days, the SEC Network turns over every day's programming to individual schools. So they do that. It's part of our contribution back, and we want to feature everyone. And so we spend most of that time on radio, but unfortunately for some of you, not too much time on TV. But we're about to make up for that.
Well, I have one more thing. Your interview with the Shane Beamer. You know, I'm an old guy, and I love to see young people succeeding. And this kid that you were talking to, well, he's not a kid, he's a young man, but he was so sincere and such a pleasant and honest. I think he's going to be successful no matter what he does.
Yeah, I don't want to sound like a lot of people because we've all heard it, or maybe we want to hear it. But as I sat here and looked at him, and I talked to him a couple of times via satellite, his father came through quite often, and his father is one of the most respected people in the history of college football.
Yeah, and just want to tell you, we're ready for Clemson. I'm going to be in Charlotte, and we're going to have our red on, and we're going to be hollering SEC.
Well, come on down. Look forward to that. I live there, of course, and everywhere I go, that game is center stage. We're heading to a break. We're not done. We still have 30 minutes remaining here on a Monday afternoon, first day of SEC Media Days, and we will be right back.
You're listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast.
We're back. Final 30 minutes in Hoover, Alabama, and I don't know whether this is good or not that we've dragged the two remaining media members around to come. Tom Hart, of course, everyone knows Tom, hosted the show the other day, and I'm still reading the rave
reviews. The bad reviews.
Hey, it's still on air. Like, I didn't drive it completely into the ground.
You are correct. We've had some guest hosts that there was a close call, and Jordan Rogers, of course. Guys, it's great to see you. And Tom, seems like we were just talking from Omaha. It looks like you recovered from there.
Yeah, it's this kind of reminds me a little bit of all these steps that we're taking back to normalcy. We talked about a little bit with the College World Series, to return to a full stadium, to get back on the road with all the people that we work with, and to finish a college baseball season that, quite frankly, wouldn't have been possible without the SEC doing what they did during football season. And now this, you know, for what this is, and it can seem frivolous at times, I think, is this four-day celebration. It's a return to normalcy, and so it's a lot of fun for me to be here and to see everybody back on the podium.
Yeah, it's easy, and we've all done it. We sometimes more off the air than on the air, the frivolity of it and the repetitiveness, but it's 4 days in July. It's not like we're stealing anything from somebody.
I'm just hoping we stay on track, do games in person, because Paul – these remote games.
Tom, tell you about the time his whole house alarm was going off in the middle of a game.
I want to talk about
a live broadcast.
Yeah, because everyone had their own challenges, but it's one thing to do a show remotely like this, which you have help. But Tom, it's a story you've told, but it's worth retelling for those who missed it.
Well, it was Kentucky, Mississippi State. We like to think all the games are big, right? It's not always true. But this had the feeling of a big game going into a Saturday night. And I knew something was up. There were some thunderstorms in the Atlanta area. I was at home in Atlanta. Cole was on site in Lexington. Jordan was at his home. And we had a blip of power, a power surge right before the end of the first half that knocked me off of the Zoom call. And if folks don't understand, they're at home watching in high definition. We are calling the game via Zoom technology, which is the same thing everybody got to know through office meetings. So I warned these guys, hey, I got knocked off, but I'm back on. We spend halftime.
But it took a little while, right? Because, like, my Zoom feed of Tom is this big, and I'm watching the game. And so I just, you know, there's silence for a little while. I'm like, well, what's going on?
So I eventually returned. We returned for the start of the second half. And then we get another power surge, and Paul, the whole home alarm system starts going off. And it sounds like DEFCON 4 in my house. And we've got another one of those sirens that spits it out to the cul-de-sac, too. Neighbors couldn't have been happy. It got so bad that I convinced my stats guy, Chris Capo, who does a magnificent job, who was on site with me in my house. I said, we got to turn it off. He literally climbed into my attic and cut the cord, like MacGyver. He didn't know which one to cut, so just snipped a couple of them. 15 minutes, I'm off the air. I've never had more job security in my life than when Cole Kublik started doing play-by-play. it all worked out for the good.
It was not pretty.
No, it's not pretty.
What were the challenges for you? Because it's one thing just to get the names and numbers right. It's another thing to try to explain what just happened.
That's the hardest part. I mean, so in a normal world, when we're on site, most of the time I'm watching over the TV monitors to see the field. As a quarterback, I like to see everything. So at home in our offices, I have a computer monitor in front of me. But, you know, the shot gets closer as the snap goes. So most of the time I can't see past the slot defender. So I can only see about, you know, maybe 12 guys, right, in total. And then by the time the replay comes on, I'm trying to explain what happened, but I'm also seeing it for the first time. So, I mean, it's extremely challenging. Luckily, you know, I'm in Puerto Rico. Power grid there is a little sketchy at times.
Really?
And every, you know, our apartment and all the apartments have a generator. So sometimes a power will click off, generator will come on. Problem is the internet goes out. So last game of the season, it happened three times in the first, like, quarter and a half. Just text Tom, hey, I'm going to be out for a couple minutes. I mean, and probably the audience maybe never even knew. They're probably like, hey, thank God he stopped talking. I mean,
hey, listen, Vin Scully had a Hall of Fame career calling games solo. I could survive without Jordan for a series or two. We could all get along without
the audience,
Cole,
though.
Well, we can all get
too much of Tom. We all know.
But
know?
Once Cole started doing play-by-play, you got to admit that was a different.
The
level.
Wheels are off.
Yeah.
Yeah, I must have already turned the game off at that point.
Oh, yeah. Shocking, because it was such a good game. I got back on finally about late in the third quarter, and I said, guys, what did I miss? I missed an interception and four punts.
Well, let me say, in terms of play-by-play, and I'm looking for some help here.
Yeah.
I mean, I know a number of play-by-play guys, and they never really stop talking, do they? when you graduate from play-by-play school, You're given that gift of gab.
They tell you that dead air will be the end of your career, so just talk through anything. I actually, that's what
I love. It's weird because they always tell us dead air is really good.
The play-by-play guys always turn the color. Hey,
let it breathe.
It's the easiest thing to do, and quite honestly. Like, I was watching the British Open this weekend, and Justin Spieth is talking to his caddy, and there's that play-by-play guy talking right over the conversation. And I'm thinking, you know, this is more interesting than anything anyone else could say. I want to hear what Spieth and the caddy are talking about. We honestly do a really good job because it's the easiest thing to do is just to stop talking. And in the SEC, that's the beauty of a third and long at Kyle Field or in Death Valley. Nothing we can say is going to add to the suspense or the fear in the quarterback's eyes when he sees somebody coming from the edge and 105,000 people on their feet.
I know nothing because I started as a writer. And so my question is, isn't it true on television you're supposed to say less?
Yes. 100%.
We all got big egos, though, right? So, I mean, my first year, I'm trying to say as much as possible. Now I look back, I'm like, man, I need to shut up. Like, the less I say, the better it is. Like Tom said, the game speaks for itself. So it'll be great to actually be in that stadium year.
And that was a really hard part about doing the games from home because you don't have a feel for the atmosphere. You don't have a feel for the ebb and the flow of the game. You know, momentum shift is a real thing in terms of atmosphere at a stadium. And when you can't see it, you can't feel it, then you end up over talking.
How difficult was it to convince your family that you're actually working?
That's the story of my life, Paul. There's always a game to watch. There's always research to be done by turning on the TV.
I mean, you're right in the middle of some game, and the family comes in and says, hey, it's time to go to dinner.
Oh, commercial breaks. He's running up to grab a bowl of chili. Like, I mean, Tom was – it was work, eat, work, play. I mean, you know, we don't know if he was actually working.
So do I'm sure we could dig it up, but give us.
Is your schedule too packed to see a doctor about your erectile dysfunction? Well, with Hims, now you can get treated for ED without stepping foot outside your door. They're changing men's healthcare by providing access to affordable sexual health treatments from the comfort of your couch. Hims provides access to doctor-trusted ED treatment options such as chewable hard mints, brand name treatments like Viagra, or generic alternatives for up to 95% cheaper. The process is simple and entirely online. Just answer a series of questions and a medical provider will determine the right treatment option. If prescribed, your medication ships to you free. No insurance needed. So what are you waiting for? Join the hundreds of thousands of trusted Hims subscribers and get treated. Start your free online visit today at Hims.com/Paul. That's HIMS.com/Paul for your personalized ED treatment options. HIMS.com/Paul. Hard mints are chewable compounded products which are not approved by or verified for safety or effectiveness by the FDA. Prescriptions require an online consultation with a healthcare provider who will determine if appropriate. Restrictions apply. See website for details and important safety information. Subscription required. Price varies on product and subscription plan.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Your best memory of Cole's play-by-play?
Oh, I don't know how I could phrase this. He was so urgent about everything, and he was yelling, and I had to educate him later. Said, you know where I'm going with this? Can I say that?
Yeah.
That I want to say?
Yeah.
I told him, I said, Cole, you sound like, not personal experience, mind you, you sound like the DJ at a gentleman's club. Okay, you don't need to scream that someone's coming to the main stage. People are watching the game because they want to be here. The microphone amplifies your voice. Everything's going to be
He fun. Did like, at one point, he did like a John Madden, like sound effect. I'm like, what is happening?
Paul, you can tell we try to have fun on our shows. We try.
Yeah, I remember sitting with you a couple of years ago, and I thought you guys were like three frat boys. I mean, talking about Friday night dinners, the this, the that.
That's what we miss about not being on the road. Yeah. And you know, traveling for Nation and being there on a Friday afternoon, the camaraderie with the crew and hanging out. Well, some of them.
Well,
hanging out, talking about the game, talking about family, other stuff. And you just miss that being at home.
No, I missed all that on my 7 years on SEC Nation. Because my challenge on that show was that on Friday afternoon, I was doing this show. while they were lounging, you know, waiting for the caviar to arrive.
Yeah. You're like, someone's working over here, guys. Come on.
But you would never know it because the manager, could you give us some? I said, I was just coming here to get a drink of water in the middle of the show. I didn't mean to interrupt.
And don't touch the avocados on the bus.
The asparagus is all mine.
These are really great inside jokes for those of you who have been on that bus before. Let's take a break because we can't joke around the whole time. They have to.
We got nowhere to go.
Okay, yeah. Well, let's bring them back because I want to get to some more stories here with the life of Tom Hart before the SEC Network.
Thank you for listening to the Paul Feinbaum Show podcast. The Paul Feinbaum Show airs weekdays on the SEC Network beginning at 3 Eastern.